thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome.
Oh, Surreal Gone and Tom Aspinall are getting back into it. Now, if you guys are boned up on this story, and I would surmise that somewhere along the way you knew the story, my attempt right now is just to remind you of it. So, Tom's setting the world on fire, right? But Tom is behind Surreal at the time of this story. Tom is behind Surreal. Surreal is, and it has already been, a world champion. And I personally don't care what you put in front of world champion. I don't care if you put featherweight. I don't care if you put light heavyweight. I don't care if you put undisputed. And I don't care if you put interim. If it ends in world champion, that means a lot to me. And I think many others, but I'll just speak for myself. But you want to know who else that means something to is Tom. And the reason we know that is that's the same thing that his world title belt says, right? So I'm just sharing, and it is important that you understand at the time of this story, positioning and who was where. Because Surreal was in front of Tom. Tom had been out and injured. Surreal was fighting in main events on pay-per-view, just for example. Okay. Well, Tom shows, even the night that he got hurt, he was the main event over Patty the Batty, over Molly, over all of them in a sold-out arena. When he comes back from an injury, I'm still talking about Tom, but he's still the main event, and that arena still sold out. And so Tom is proving that he's very meaningful, and he's got a real good reputation going. And that's getting started, and that's getting spread by none other than Michael Bisping. But that's a big voice, man. That's a big carnival barker to have in your corner. And Tom lays out the plan. He says right there in the closing moments of the entire program, after he gets a stoppage victory, I am going to go to Paris. I'm going to watch Surreal's next fight. I am going to take on the winner of that fight. And the winner of that is then going to face John Jones. Now, that was the greatest and the only plan that anybody had laid out in the entire sport. No division had a round robin like that. You may agree with it or you may disagree. At the time that Tom said it, it did feel as though he had left out Sergey Pavlich. But either way, right, like, not all the steps had to come through for the idea to be great. Like Tom said, I'm going to go out to Paris and I'm going to go watch Surreal's next fight and I'm going to take on the winner of that fight. Like if you just get those steps, okay, fine. Doesn't necessarily have to draw into John Jones. I mean, there's plenty of moving parts. And at that time, John was already signed to take on Stipe and a few things out of your control. But Tom did just that. The UFC liked the idea so much that they put his big ass on an airplane and flew him out there first class. Put him up in a nice hotel, got the transportation, picked him up, drove him over to the event, did the whole thing, sat him in the front row. And you really must understand that Tom did his part in that, in the waning moments of his own main event in front of his own countrymen, he used that time to talk about Surreal. Tom then got the idea over and went to Paris. So in those waning moments, it's so important that you do understand this. I mean, this is the whole thing. Surreal stoppage victory looks great, takes the microphone. Tom's sitting right there. Surreal acts like he's not even in the building. Did not say his name, did not acknowledge the challenge, did not invite him into the ring for a face-off. You know, Surreal seems like a very nice guy. Like, I imagine if Tom would have gone in the ring, you're probably having a face-off between two really nice guys. There's probably going to be even a smile and a handshake, and it's all going to be about sportsmanship. Oh, okay, great. But I think that is relevant. Like, when you are a really nice guy like Surreal, sometimes you just don't want your moment ruined. You're going to have some guy like Chael's going to come in there and steal some shine and make it about him. Maybe you do give him the blow-off, but that isn't the situation there, and it seemed like it would have been very appropriate to do. Now, he made his choice and he didn't do it. And afterwards, Tom simply said, I am not going to bully Surreal. His lack of calling me out has made it very clear he does not want to fight me and I am going to move on. Now, whether he said that as a way of getting the fight or he meant it, either way, this is now the statement. Oh, and guess what? He did move on right into Madison Square Garden world title fight opposite Sergey Pavlich, who, even according to me, is the one guy that was left out of that equation. Tom gets the jump on him, and all of a sudden, Surreal would like the fight. And Tom's saying, no, I'm not giving you the fight. And Tom has been associated with Curtis Blaydes. Curtis called Tom out. Tom liked that idea. I think Tom might have even gone first. And now Surreal is talking about Curtis Blaydes. And there's somewhere that I'm missing, but I don't have to know. Like, don't think you need to leave me a comment. I'll find out soon enough. I don't have to know. The point is, Tom is standing firm on his ground that he's not going to give him the opportunity. And it's as simple as, I would have given you the opportunity when you were in front of me and I needed you, when I had to come to you, when I flew out there hoping that you would accept my challenge, you ignored me. And now that I'm in front of you, I'm returning the favor, which is to not do you one. And I'm only bringing that to you because that is a pretty damn good fight. You want to know maybe the best fight that you could book right now? Because I'm leaving John out, right? I don't know when John's coming back. You want to know the fight. I'm talking about a draw. I'm talking about you form a poster, you drop it. Whoa. The community goes, yeah, I want to see that. Is Stipe versus Surreal. Now, I'm not suggesting for you you're going to get that fight. But Tom and Surreal makes a level of sense. I understand where Tom's annoyance would be, no matter how petty. I do get it. And I kind of enjoy that he's sticking to it, frankly. The other side is, if we are going to have interim champions fighting undisputed champions, it would be hard to run the risk of being forced to book Surreal and John Jones. Like, we don't need to go as far as to say that that opportunity will never come again. We wouldn't want to take a motivation. And Surreal's done everything right, right? Come on, a guy can have a bad few minutes. But to find yourself in a position where you feel forced to do it, I think is going to be met with some review. And I think it's one of the reasons that Tom isn't being greatly encouraged by the office to go and take that fight. Now, we'll see where that goes. And if I sounded like my typical jerk of a self towards Surreal, I don't mean to be. I feel as though Surreal can take it, right? He's a good-looking guy. He's a young guy. He's a former world champion. He make a bunch of money. I feel like Surreal can take it, but there was a blunder there. There was. He blew a guy off. What goes around comes around. So that's the update. That's the timeline and the update of Surreal and Tom Aspen. To let the cat out of the bag. He gave us some inside scoop. And this is Paulo talking about Paulo, but he said that he was offered Jared Cannonier and that he said yes. Now, I want to stay on that. Jared Cannonier, this is off the top of my head, but he has not fought since June of last year. If I'm wrong, it was since July of last year. So, and I've never really known where he's been at. I know that many people say that he had an injury and that's why he's been out. I do know that, but I would remind those people that he's been a backup fighter. So I don't know how much, I don't know that the injury is accurate. And by the way, if it is, I'm not attempting to begrudge or undo it. I'm just sharing with you that where has Jared Cannonier been is a very meaningful name to 185 pounds. Cannonier beat Strickland just by example. Strickland in his next fight, and if I'm wrong, just one in between. There was one in between. He had the Russian in between. He went and became world champion. So we can't even begin to pretend that Cannonier isn't very relevant. He is. But where's he been? Okay, great. Well, Paulo Costa shined a little light on it. Gonna put those together. All right. And Paulo said yes to it. Okay. Well, a couple days goes by. Paulo says he hears back from the UFC. Says, we're not putting you with Cannonier, we're putting you with Sean Strickland. Okay, a couple more days goes by. He finds out he's not going to be fighting Sean Strickland. Sean didn't want to do the fight. Now, Paulo threw this out there, and in the vein that Paulo put it out there, I'm not sure that Paulo knew he was right.
I think Paulo was out there basically, right? You call a guy chicken, you say a guy's scared. I realize that's playground rules, but the things that work on the playground work all the way up into the octagon. But I believe that Paulo thought he was trolling. I believe he thought, I'm just going to go to the media and I'm going to say that Sean's scared. That they offered, I accepted, and he said no. Now, maybe Paulo had that information. But I don't think he did. Well, it turned out he was right. Sean Strickland said he was right. Sean Strickland came out and said, yes, I was offered Paulo. I did not like the terms, and I'm not doing it for those terms. I'll fight Paulo. That's not the issue. I have, and he talked about what his reservations are. So before we get to that, I would like you to leave me a comment down below. And if you're a big fan of this page, I am going to put up, but I haven't done it yet. I'm going to put up a poll because I would be curious of that round robin, how you would like to see it. I'm not going to give you the option of removing Paulo and getting Cannonier and Sean in there because that'd be a rematch. I've never heard any of you asking for the rematch. But I do want to know, would you rather see Paulo in there with Sean or would you rather see Paulo in there with Cannonier, which would also represent the return of Cannonier? And I think that is something that many of you have been waiting for and kind of wondering where he's at. So my guess is that Cannonier is healed. I don't know that I believe that he was ever as hurt as some of the rumors, only because he was the backup fighter, right, in Australia. He was the one that went out there in case Sean couldn't make the walk against Izzy. And the fact, the reason I'm dwelling on this, it's hard to get answers. Jared Cannonier has kind of got a new shtick where he's a man of silence. I have a hard time getting to the bottom of things with him sometimes. So if Paulo Costa was told he's going to have Cannonier, and then all of a sudden he gets called back and says, no, it's not Cannonier, it's going to be Sean, does that mean that Cannonier couldn't do the fight because I'm wrong and he is in fact injured? That's possible too. So I'm asking you. I know that some of you know. I will read the comments, but fill me in. Who do you want to see Paulo Costa fight the most, and where is Jared Cannonier? What do we have here? So, my old friend Drake Riggs went and wrote an article. And yes, Drake, I'm aware that the email I sent you is misplaced because you were talking about their last fight. Let it go. All right, here's the thing. Chandler and Poirier have found each other again. And Chandler and Poirier are in a very interesting position for many reasons. Like for these two to be bickering at one another over on one of the .coms getting written up by Drake Riggs. I mean, not for nothing. They're not on 300, but they're both going to be in town and they've already fought, but it was an awesome fight that everybody would like to see again. There's a lot of rematches going on. These two were supposedly going to be the commonality for Conor McGregor. But if you like that storyline, then they can be a commonality and go find themselves. I don't know that that's going to happen, but everybody likes Dustin Poirier and everybody likes Michael Chandler. Dustin Poirier is not mean to anybody ever for any reason, and neither is Michael Chandler. So there's just something about when they find each other that's compelling. And there's something about when they start talking about that fight that they had, because I remember it so clearly. I remember the finish. I remember them being on the ground. I know how it happened. I know what round it was in. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that was an awesome fight that I never thought we'd get again. And I'm not predicting it for you now, but I will tell you that who you're going to match up Dustin Poirier with is wildly difficult. I mean, one of the reasons that Dustin hasn't been booked yet is you got to take your oars out of the water and let a few things play out. I'm not convinced that the best idea, if Gaethje gets a win, I'm not convinced that it's Gaethje goes into Islam. I think if
Sarkarian also gets a win, that you're going to need to stare at that. But I think that Gaethje goes right back into a title fight. It's just for the BMF title, and it's against Dustin. That's my thought. I don't pretend to be wonderful matchmaker. I'm sharing you that that's at least a thought. Now, the reason I say that is it really does prove and illustrate that we don't quite know what we're going to do with Dustin. And if Dustin was to go in against Gaethje, which would make a lot of sense and sell a lot of tickets that people would love to see, no question about it, but it's not only a rematch, it's a trilogy. So once I get you on board to understand that a rematch for Dustin is very possible. I mean, in a perfect world, would it be Connor? In a perfect world, but never did get that Nate Diaz business. I mean, it's one of these things. Where exactly do you want him? And the same thing goes with Michael Chandler. And again, I'm not going as far as to tell you that I think this is the beginning. These guys are going to find their way to each other. I'm just letting you know, when Michael Chandler does start speaking up and it's on somebody that's not Connor, it's refreshing. Like, Michael Chandler just found out how to be entertaining. Truly. Here on the back end of his career, he might be the most entertaining guy in the sport. He might have surpassed Connor. Like, we want to know. We have to get to those press conferences and let it rip. Right? They say you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. Well, give them both a microphone, and it's not as foregone of a conclusion as you might think. Chandler is fire. So, how long is he going to wait? That's everybody's guess. That's everybody's question. And what if? I mean, if you just want to play the what if game, what if? Like, if Michael Chandler was to not get Conor McGregor, I will tell you right now, at a minimum, he is going to want to delay McGregor. He might not admit it. It might be some evil side within him. But if he gets inconvenienced, he is going to want to inconvenience Conor. Well, if Conor's not going to fight Chandler, he's going to fight Poirier, isn't he? So if Chandler was to not fight Conor, but he was to go and steal Poirier, right? I know we're having some funny. I know we're going in circles, but these guys are talking for a reason. These guys are going back and forth, and they're sour about something. And I don't quite know where that comes from Dustin's standpoint. Because he won. But for Chandler to point out, yeah, but it was a position and the fight was real competitive. Like, that's all true. That's all true. And I don't think we're going in that direction. But I do think it would be strategically very wise to start to build something else. Whether the UFC likes it, the opponent likes it, whether you even like it yourself, to build something else and start to have that interest is what Conor has always done so well. One of the reasons the guys are on bended knee and they're begging and they're kissing the ring and all these things that Conor says in Red Panty Night, it's a celebration. One of the things is because he never lets you think it's just you. I mean, he's been doing this to Chandler as recently as 1 month ago, talking about, I'm going to go box Manny Pacquiao. And maybe that truly is an opportunity. It would seem like if you wanted to go do it, you would just go box Manny Pacquiao. I mean, what a perfect scenario for a guy that's got a hurt leg. Going to a sport where you don't even use the leg. I mean, I could tell you as a wrestler, some of the best Greco guys we had were guys that never wanted to do Greco. They hurt their knee and couldn't do freestyle anymore. Go ask Dave Zuniga how the transition worked out. I mean, just sharing for you. I don't know how much truth there is to Conor and Manny, but that isn't the point. I don't know that there has to be truth to Chandler going after Poirier. It has to be perception. And frankly, I like it.
Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, my listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Guys, I'm really into things that add more convenience to my life. It's even better when it also comes with safety in a high-quality package. I'm talking about my Eufy Video Lock. I'm still loving this thing. I love this thing so much that I'd like to invest in the company. I am so impressed with this product that I'm willing to back it. And if anyone out there knows how I can do it, please reach out. You got to check it out for yourself. I'll probably do a quick social post, but for now, just search Eufy Video Lock. Do it online. It's a 3-in-1 smart lock, 2K camera with an audio and doorbell. It's easy to install. It has fingerprint recognition, so I don't even have to remember a code. I can control it all in an app, which again, the convenience is such a big plus for me. We are always on the go, and being able to monitor our home on the road is such a nice option. Not only that, I don't have to rush to the door if the doorbell rings. I can either open the door or ignore whoever's at the door by vetting them through the app. There is no monthly fees for security video storage. The battery is rechargeable, and each charge lasts about 4 months. This Eufy lock is fantastic, and I highly recommend it. Search Eufy Video Lock online. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door. Oh, we are getting close, guys. This is going down. I got asked a question, which is, and I want to pose it back to you guys, but what fight are you most looking forward to? And generally speaking, it would be the main event, but not always. I believe it was Errol Hawani who coined the phrase people's main event. And there is a people's main event, and it's not always the last match. It looks as though Max and Justin have stolen that title, people's main event. But is that the one you want to see the most? Like, if I was to ask you what fighter on this card is most likely to fight for a title before they're done, if I was to ask you who's most likely to be champion before they're done, if I was to ask you what fighter on this card is most likely to go into the Hall of Fame, because there's a bunch, I think you'd have a hard time answering that. And do you want to know what my answer is? The one I want to see?
And what fighter on this card is most guaranteed lock for the Hall of Fame? Holly Holm. Now, it's a fight, so of course, Kayla Harrison. But how many times have we counted Holly out? Like, did any of you believe that Holly could win this fight? From the time that it was announced, I remember where I was when this got announced. And it's just one of those fights. One of those fights that grabs you and you go, what? My very first thought is, at 135 pounds, that can't be right. And I was reading this on a doc. I said, that's got to be a misprint. Kayla Harrison has weighed 145 in her fight career. She went over to Invicta to do it. But before she did it, she did an interview like 3 years ago. And I still remember it because she said she hasn't weighed 145 pounds since she was 17 years old. A junior in high school. That's a quote. So when I hear 135, I go, oh, that can't be right. And I know that Holly is willing to go up and it's a special night and it's 300 and they're not reviving the 145 pound division, but this fight is going to be at 145. Had it all wrong. Kayla's going down. Kayla said that she's going to do a test cut. Now, Kayla looks like she's carved out of stone as is. Like there is nothing but muscle. Very lean. That's at 155 pounds. As a matter of fact, that's the only time I've ever seen her. I never saw her in Invicta fight where she weighed 145. So for me, I've only seen her at 155 and I only saw her judo matches, which were 170. I'm going to see her at 135 for the first time. I am very much looking forward to that. And there's a reason we face them off, right? That marketing, that expression, a picture is worth a thousand words. That is why we face them off. How is this person doing? What is their level of fitness? Is it too much? Can they recover? Now, I got to just get in front of that right now. Because you will hear commentators and you will hear that all week of, oh, I don't know if she can recover and her legs are going to be weak. Please stop. None of that is true. When you weigh in on a Friday and you fight on a Saturday, it just isn't true. To put this in wrestling standpoints for you, which was around 150 years before MMA. And I get that this is new, but they'll do what's called an hour weigh-in. They will weigh them in and 1 hour later, you are on the mat. In a tournament, they'll do what's called a two-hour weigh-in. Now, I know there's significant differences. I've done them both. But in a 24-hour situation where you do it on a Friday, I mean, you get a meal, you get a recovery, you get a workout, you get a full night's sleep. Now you repeat that, you get another meal, another nap, another recovery. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. There is absolutely nothing valid about it. But the reason I am looking at the weigh-in is she going to make it? That is valid. Kayla had claimed to the media that she had done a test cut. Now, she did not do a test cut, just so you understand. That is fiction. Unless I don't know the definition of test cut. That is very possible. When I hear test cut, I assume as a test, she cut down to 135 pounds. That might not be what she meant. She might mean, hey, I pulled some weight. I knew my body well enough to know if I pulled the water out, I could make 135. This is how I thought. I don't know what she meant by it. And I don't bring it up as a way of calling BS on a story. I bring it up so that you don't miss the drama of the story. This is going to be a very long and a very difficult week, and we're going to see Kayla. We're going to see her at press conferences. We're going to see what her energy is like and how she is talking. It's very fascinating. And then once she gets there, the make-believe that she's going to have her way with Holly Holm, oh my God. You know how many other women have thought they were going to have their way with Holly Holm? And Holly's actually the first. I remember when Holly came over to the sport. I mean, you could go all the way back to like Marie Smith, but I remember when Holly came to the sport, she was going to go right into Ronda, and Ronda was an Olympic medalist in a grappling, and this was established all the way back in 1993. You put a striker against a grappler, there's simply nothing to see here. She was a 17-time world boxing and kickboxing champion. I was caught out. I said, man, those belts aren't real. There's no validity. Promoters putting those up at the end of the night. They asked her about it, and Holly said, yeah, Chael's right. I agree with him. I need to beat Ronda. This will be my world championship. And she did it. A lot of good straights. And then that high head kick felt around the world. And at the time she did it, it was like a big upset. It was like when Maurice Smith did that to Mark Coleman. If you guys have been around that long and you remember, it was a very similar feel in that, hey, great job. This is what dreams are made of. You couldn't do that again. And anybody that's choosing to watch this and tries to copy you isn't going to have success either. Well, when I say Holly was first, she really was. I mean, Holly got that done before Israel Adesanya, before he came over and started using kickboxing skills, took that to an MMA title. Holly got that done as a 17-time boxing and kickboxing champion long before Alex Pereira came over. I think that you got to put Francis in that category. He said he wanted to be a boxer, then he goes out and boxes, and we see that boxing is... I mean, does he go into that category? Did he not have enough of a background as a striker? Fair enough, but Ciryl Gane did. Ciryl Gane was like 27-2. If I'm wrong, it was 29-3. I mean, I'm right in there. That might have been Adesanya's record. The point is, these kickboxers really started to come over. And if you follow that story and you talk to experts, they'll all give the credit to Adesanya. They'll all say that he was the one that showed and opened the doors. But that's not quite the way it happened. The one that changed the game, the one that did it first, the one that took those skills and said, I can make this work. Because they were willing to put in the work. The first to do it was Holly Holm. On Garbrandt versus Figueiredo. I just read an interview by Garbrandt. I mean, I must tell you, let's start with this. That's an awesome fight. I was there when Garbrandt won his last match, which represented two in a row, and called out Figueiredo. I've been thinking, man, that's a big fight. Where did that call out come from? Like, I don't remember a time anybody's called out Figueiredo. And Figueiredo doesn't seem like the kind of guy that you call out unless it's for the belt. Like, if you call out a really hard fight, a guy that's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, generally speaking, the title's on the line. You convince yourself and others that you want to fight him and that you can beat him, even if nobody believes it, including yourself, because you need the opportunity. So when Garbrandt called him out, I thought, man, this is a big deal. And I don't know what's on it. It's just my own thought. I'm sharing in that moment. I don't know what's on it. So this must be personal. I can't remember a time Cody went after somebody except when it was personal. I remember when he went after Dominic Cruz. I remember when he went after Dillashaw. I remember when he went after Conor McGregor on the set of Ultimate Fighter before people even knew what a Cody Garbrandt was. So going after somebody like Figueiredo, I thought, man, this has got to be, there's something on this. Old Chael must get to the bottom. Find out what this story is. All right. Well, fast forward 3 months, because here we are, and sure enough, Cody got the fight. And I remember when Dana was building up 300. We didn't have a main event, but Dana said, you're going to be so impressed with this card. You're going to see people fight and say, oh my God, I can't believe they're not on the main card. Well, sure enough, right? Like I remember when Dana made that quote, and as soon as I saw Cody versus Figueiredo, first fight of the prelims, I go, whoa, that's what Dana was talking about. And Dana delivered, because that is an amazing match, but it's not for a contendership. It's not for a title. So I am still left at the same position of wondering, how did we get here? And what are we doing? So Figueiredo's done his level best. I mean, he talked about some of the struggles that Cody has had, and Figueiredo's confident he's going to go win the fight. They asked Cody about it. Cody said that Figueiredo, Cody believes, based on Figueiredo coming at him so hard in the media, which frankly, he really didn't say that much, but that he's doing that because he didn't train properly. In fact, Cody's deduction to know that Figueiredo is not ready for the fight is the fact that Figueiredo did go talk to the media and was talking about the fact that he could beat Garbrandt's run since winning the championship or losing the championship, however you choose to look at that. Garbrandt said for Figueiredo to be speaking to me that way, it means he didn't train properly. He didn't train properly, and the reason I know that is I've been in his shoes, having to talk like that to try to get in your opponent's head because you realize you're not ready for the fight. I thought that was very interesting. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard somebody say that before, even when it is accurate. Guys do play that game. They try to get under their skin. I don't know if subconsciously or consciously they do that because they feel they didn't prepare and it's what they have to do. I don't know. I just know Cody Garbrandt's a former champion of the world,
and he has the right to an opinion. Right? I mean, if anybody knows about fighting, particularly in that division, particularly about fighting him, it's him. So, right? I mean, I can't really question what he's saying. I find Cody to be one of the X factors in the entire sport. Like, you guys will remember when Simon Cowell came out explaining stars on American Idol and why some people work and why some people doesn't. And it's not just who can carry the better tune and the better bucket. It has to do with the X factor. Do they have it? And we all knew these things, but Simon's the one that really verbalized it. And when you look at Cody Garbrandt, he has it. Whatever it is, which nobody could define, including Simon Cowell, who coined the phrase. Cody's got it. There's something there. There's something happening. He got them beady little eyes. He's tougher than all hell. He fights with a good style. He's got this incredible team behind him. Like, there's something there. And getting Cody to listen to me, to old shit. He likes me. He didn't listen to me. He is so stubborn. Because Cody very clearly has two ways to win a fight. Cody can out-wrestle almost any of the opponents who have beaten Cody. Cody could out-wrestle. Now, you guys don't know that, and I can't prove it to be true because he never tried. Cody can also beat you by knocking you out, and he prefers to knock you out. Now, there's a few guys like that. Dan Henderson made two Olympic teams. Tell me one time you saw Dan get a takedown. You could do it, but tell me one time. Josh Koscheck, undefeated NCAA champion. Tell me one time he went and got a takedown. Justin Gaethje would be a great example. Division I, All-American. A higher achievement. Previous guys that I mentioned, well, tell me one time he went out and got a takedown, right? So it's not totally uncommon that you have these very good grapplers that go and do something different. I'm just sharing with you. I don't need Cody to become Mr. Ground and Pound. I don't need him to become Mr. Jiu-Jitsu, where he gets a takedown, he's passing guard, he's doing all these things, right? The new Damian Maya. I just want him to reintroduce it. That's all I want. I want him to offer the threat of a takedown. I would like him to try a couple of takedowns as a way of making the opponent guess and come right back to the strike. See, it's a very interesting match. Like, I read this thing going into this fight that Cody lost five of his six fights after winning the championship. And that could be true. I don't remember it that way. I mean, in my mind, Cody won his last fight, and when I think about it, he won the one before that as well. And when I think about it, he was a former world champion. Like, that's how I remember. I don't know about these five of six, and I do know there was times, and there was a little streak there, where Cody did not offer the threat of the takedown, got in some shootouts. It's hard to win all of those. It's a really interesting match. I'm just wondering what you guys think. Cody's assertion that Fedorenko's chatter has to be because he didn't prepare properly and he knows that. I think that's a very interesting claim. And even if that's true, right, Figueredo has always said the hardest thing Figueredo's had in his career is to beat the scale the night before the fight. But he doesn't have to do that here. He's up at 135. I expect him to perform very well. But there is certain laws. You guys have to follow them too, right? I mean, laws of humanity. Like, you're probably not going to work harder than you have to at anything. And the fact that he's not going to 125, which means he didn't have to burn as many calories. If he didn't have to burn as many calories, how many fewer calories did he burn, right? He didn't have to eat quite as healthy. So how much less healthy did he eat? Like, these things are very relevant. Cody Garbrandt's not out on a limb here. He's got a way to go. He might be right. What if he is? What if we see that Figueredo was not prepared for this fight? If that's the case, Cody identifying that through Figueredo's behavior in the media, I gotta tell you, he will have taught us all something. We will have learned something that we didn't previously know. We'll watch for it in the future. It was a simple claim by Cody. I don't know if he's right, but I'm gonna be looking for it. I just saw an alpha off. It was great. It was really great. So, Jamahal Hill just met Alex Pereira. They passed each other, and to make believe that they've never seen each other cross paths before is probably naive. I'm quite confident that Alex cornered Glover when Jamal fought Glover. So there would have been an exchange and a hi hello in the ring, if not in the back as well. But when these two came across each other, it's at least at a minimum the first time that they've engaged since signing the bout agreement to not only fight for the title that Alex holds, which is the very title that became available because Jamal gave it up. He was never beaten for it. But they're also going to do it in the main event of a pay-per-view that is going to pay the champion an astronomical amount of money in comparison to anything else he's ever done because it happens to be on 300. And whether there was some graciousness shown by the UFC to make sure that Jamal participates in that or not, it's not part of his contract. But it would be part of his contract since he's the main event of 300 had he not relinquished the belt. So it's a very interesting spot. But before we digress into the ins and outs of a standardized UFC contract, I do want to talk to you about them meeting because it was all caught on camera. And there is so much gamesmanship that goes into those moments. And I know people watch press conferences and they watch the things that said, then they try to break it down and talk about, oh, he was trying to get in his head. He was trying to intimidate him, but they don't ever go further with that because they don't know why being in the head would help you. They don't know why that would be an objective or a strategy. And they don't know why because they just say things. Like there's things in this sport that people just say. Reach advantage, height advantage, footwork, feeling out process. Like there's things that don't even exist in the sport, but the expressions have been around forever. So when I'm watching this alpha off, see, this is the ultimate press conferences and getting in somebody's head. This is all lack of understanding from those that haven't done it. The good stuff is when you're caught on camera, not with your words, but with your actions in an organic moment. And that's what we had here. So Jamal goes up to Alex, shakes his hand. Now, you guys can be in the same room and be doing your pictures and doing your interviews and just ignore the guy or even get a chip on your shoulder. Or you can go over and say hello. Jamal went and said hello. And Alex never appears to be the most jovial guy and happiest guy, but you also can't say that he's irritated or bothered. Like, he puts off a body language and an expression that's kind of hard to interpret. It really is. And so, you know, Alex was doing Alex, and Jamal needed a sweatshirt sign. Now, you cannot be the alpha in an alpha off, and you cannot win the alpha off if you ask the guy for his autograph. It cannot be done. So Jamal gets it from him. And I got put in the same spot one time. I was on a collision course with Anderson. Now, I was still in a company called ECW, WEC. I was not like a leading candidate to get Anderson, but I thought about him every day. I knew where I was going. I knew where I was headed. I knew who I wanted. Then they came out to Portland, and I get tasked by a member of the Oregon State Athletic Commission. He tells me, hey, Chael, I can't do it. I'm in uniform tonight. Can you go get these T-shirts signed by Anderson Silva? So I got to go to a line of people waiting for Anderson. I cut the line, I go, but I still got to get these signed. Knowing in my heart, the day will come when I'm going to stick a knife right in this guy's back. It was embarrassing, but I had to do it. Jamal had to get this shirt signed because he's having everybody on 300 sign it. So I'm just sharing, like, it's a very difficult position to be in when you're trying to win an alpha off. You're not going to get in the guy's head at a press conference. All these things they tell you, power is the last thing to go. Look at them feeling out. Notice his footwork. None of them are true. You don't ever hear an actual fighter saying it. You hear a guy like Harold Letterman that doesn't know anything but has the seat at the table. You hear guys like that say it. And I'm sharing with you why this is so important. When you have these actual physical engagements, like a handshake, a bro hug, an eye contact that has to be engaged and broken by somebody, that is where you actually will gain confidence or make your opponent lose confidence because you do have an ability to get in his head. So what is Jamal going to do? How is he possibly going to ask for an autograph while remaining high-handed? Well, I thought he did a pretty good job. He said, even though we're going to do what we got to do, I'm still a fan. I respect you. I appreciate what you've done in the sport. And I've asked everybody on the card to sign this. I'm even going to sign it myself. So, okay, well, he just explained. He has to ask him, right? He's got to get this thing signed. It's a sweatshirt, whatever he's going to do with it, whether it's a keepsake, whether it's for a friend, whether he auctioned it off for charity. Who knows? He's got a job to do, though. He's got to get it signed by everybody. I thought he explained it pretty well. And Pierre stood his ground. He did what he does, which is to be gracious, to look you in the eye, to never break contact. But he also doesn't smile. He doesn't do the whole, yeah, yeah, I respect you back. He stands his ground. He walks away in a very stoic fashion. So when I watched this, the fact that it was started by Jamal is very strong. The fact that it was ended by Jamal is very strong. Jamal walked up, Jamal walked away. The fact that Jamal needed an autograph, not so good. Final sign, when it's done, Jamal takes the shirt that gets signed. He basically throws it to a corner man without even making eye contact. I thought for an alpha op, this was a draw. Alright guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you that if you enjoyed this episode, please go over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. You can also submit a 5-star rating over on my Spotify feed. I'm going to be back for more on Tuesday. Enjoy the weekend. And until next week, I am Chael Sonnen and you are welcome.